Gina's having an adventure in babysitting.
It's a horror show.
Because these little devils bring out the animal in her.
Roly-poly, fat and ugly.
So she's satisfying her ravenous appetite.
No one leaves until I'm full.
By cooking up a little finger food.
You are who you eat.
On the next Freddy's Nightmares.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to Springwood, Ohio.
We're back, baby.
Because it's time, oh my yes, it's time for some more Freddy's Nightmares.
That it is, and I know we always say this, but like this is detrimentally...
Detrimentally
relating to this episode.
Oh.
This is a... wild one.
this is an odd duck in the realm of Freddy's Nightmares, and that is saying something. I'm your host, Enrique Couto, here with Louis Denoyer.
I swear
and
to
we
God.
Are what? What's wrong? What's wrong, Louis?
Yeah, continue.
I'm not gonna call you Louis because that's not right.
Why don't you just
Louis...
call me Dave?
First of all, that's a pretty harsh decision. I'll call you Dave. That's not nice. I'm sorry. David Louis Denoyer is here.
That. Hello.
And real quick before we get into the show, I do want to mention, if you enjoy this program and you enjoy what we're doing, we really need you to do us one little favor that costs you no money. And that is give us a rating on your favorite podcasting app, because that helps show people that are thinking about listening to the
yes.
show that people like the show. So whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartMedia, wherever it is, if you leave a 5-star rating or a 4-star rating, but really 5-star rating, then it helps us immensely. So please consider that.
We would greatly appreciate it.
Well, we're like 20-some episodes. We're like 20 episodes in or
we
so.
We are nearing the end of season one, and I cannot believe
and
it.
I have keep telling you, get us a celebration ready, and you keep saying, oh, I will, and I don't know. But yeah, so this is, of course, Welcome to Prime Time of Freddy's Nightmares podcast, and I'm very, very excited because this episode is bizarre. It's season one, episode 19, Missing Persons.
That is correct. Missing Persons. And we'll get into it a little later, but I don't know how this name does for this episode. I feel like there's some better ones they could have came up with, but I could be wrong.
I'm not exactly sure how they came up with that title for this
yeah.
episode.
But we'll get there. So we're talking about Missing Persons, season one, episode 19. Original air date was May 7th or 8th, 1989. Now, this episode is written and directed by Jeff Frelick. He only had one episode directed before this, which was he was also the writer on Sister's Keeper. Now, the reason I bring him up again is because I was looking at his filmography today, and I've looked at this man's filmography a couple times now.
Yes.
And I caught something on there that I guess I just had missed before. Have you ever heard of the series Naked City?
I've heard that title.
So it was a cop show in, like, I want to say, like, the 50s or 60s, maybe even the 70s. But anyway, in the 90s, they decided to do direct-to-video films, like NYPD cop dramas of Naked City. Frelick did two of them, one of which is Justice with a Bullet, and the other is Naked City, A Killer Christmas. They star Scott Glenn as a cop, so I think we need to track these
down.
So
wait, so it was a TV series and then it was movies?
Yeah, it was made into movies in the
90s. Oh, so they cut the series into movies?
Direct to video. No, they basically brought the series back into direct to video, like, remakes.
You're positive they didn't just cut them into movies?
Pretty sure they didn't, because the original series that I could find was black and white.
Oh, okay, okay. I just was wondering, because I was wondering if we had, like, a Black Scorpion situation where Corman cuts
easily
the episodes
been, yeah.
into movies.
But no, I read up on these a little bit, and I'm going to try to track these down. We can only get them on VHS, unfortunately.
I like how you're like, you're going to try and track them down. You're going to make me track them down.
I mean,
I'm your track down guy.
I might try to find physical copies.
David, I'm the track down man.
I mean, you are.
I know.
I'll give you credit. All right, so.
Oh, and we're recording this a day later than normal,
that
although
is
you're
correct.
Hearing it on the same day, because Dave had to do Valentine's Day stuff.
I had to do Valentine's Day stuff, and I saw you did Valentine's Day stuff,
yeah, because
too.
Because you wouldn't do the show with me.
Yeah, you went to B&G's, though. I didn't get to.
People, they don't even know what you're talking about.
Exactly. This is just exclusive.
Louis.
So,
get to the
season one, episode 19, Missing Persons. The episode opens as we see a car pulling up in front of a large house as a woman waits on the porch.
Oh, not just any large house, but with the most welcoming red lights all of the house's exterior lights are red bulbs.
There's so much technical things about this episode I'm going to get
but
into with
it's
you.
It's so inviting. It's like, oh, look, it's nice. The house has red light bulbs. Like, I don't, most people are probably normal and have never had odd colored light bulbs outside their house.
Yeah.
I used to have a blue porch light and I had, and I have an, I used to have an orange garage light.
Yeah.
And I tried red.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts your eyes.
It also looks like the red light district.
Well, that's a good thing. But the bad thing is, the bad thing is it starts to literally like hurt your eyes. Like it's painful to look at. And this guy, they've just got not only a red light emanating from in the house,
yeah,
but there were two porch lights, yep, both red bulbs. Because why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you, yeah, indeed? So a man who we come to meet as Mr. Ken Franklin, played by Timothy Bottoms. He was in his first starring role was Johnny Get Your Gun or Johnny Got His Gun in 71. He was in Roller Coaster in 77.
None of these matter.
Toby Hooper's Invader from Mars in 1986.
Still doesn't matter. You haven't gotten to the most important one yet.
Top Dog in 1995.
You're getting closer.
Uncle Sam. In 1997, he was the guy that gets shot in the head as Lincoln.
Wait, are you talking about the dad?
Yeah.
So you didn't notice the most important credit he
had. Must have missed it then.
Mio in the Land of Faraway?
Oh shit!
He's
the dad!
This is, guys, this is why Dave doesn't have his own podcast.
No. For the record though, I brought up Bill Lustig's Uncle Sam.
Which is lovely, and phenomenal. Congratulations, dear. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I've grown to love that, yeah, movie. But Mio and the Land of Faraway.
I can't believe I fucking missed that.
He's literally the dad. Mio. My Mio. For those uninitiated, Mio and the Land of Faraway is this truly bizarre Soviet-era co-production that it was like Irish and Soviet co-production. It has Christian Bale when he's like 11 years old.
Kid.
And it's based on a kid's book, but the budget is like high, but not high enough. So some stuff is really weird. It's super dark. Christopher Lee's character is mortifying.
Yes,
in
he
it.
Is.
It's not really readily available, but you could find
you
it.
You could find it.
Yeah, it was called Mio and the Land of Faraway, or as I rented it on VHS, The Land of Faraway. And that was one of those movies where you would sit with a group of friends and you're all talking about stuff, and they're like, yeah, man, like the Brave Little Toaster, yeah, like Five Will Goes West. I'm like, yeah, or like when that kid finds out he's a prince and he goes to the Land of Faraway, and there's just crickets. And then I go, oh, that one was just me.
Just you.
Yeah, some reason.
But in your defense, we did come to Mio in the Land of Faraway because I showed you Cloak and Dagger for the first time, and that's how we got
and
on the topic of
it. And that's what made me go, okay, I got to, yep, show you Mio in the Land of Faraway. So, but that's why I'm so mad, because the moment I saw him,
oh,
I was,
man,
like, that's the dad from Mio in the Land of Faraway.
Yeah, you have absolutely a right to rip my ass on that one. So Mr. Franklin exits the car and opens the door for Gina, the babysitter, who was played by Eva LaRue. She was in Dangerous Curves in 1988, Ghoulies Go to College in 1990.
Ooh.
RoboCop 3, 1993. This is for you. Lake Terrace View, 2008.
She was in Lake Terrace View?
She's the wife with what's-his-face.
No way.
Yeah. And then Young and the Restless is her most famous. She's played Celeste for like 22, 30 episodes now. So she gets out thanking Mr. Franklin for the ride. He responds that she's doing them the favor by filling in for their usual sitter.
Yes, that's right, kids. We got a babysitter story.
We got a babysitter.
Yeah.
He shows Gina the house, and she comments she knows this place. Mr. Franklin informs her she grew up here and puts his arm around her. Walking her up to the house, he comments that he hopes she likes precocious. Mr. Franklin introduces Gina to his wife, Mrs. Cindy Franklin, who's played by Lancey Lanari. Now, she was in Uncommon Valor in 1983, Alf in 1988.
That's what's up.
Matlock in 1991. 92, she was the voice of Morticia Adams in the Addams Family cartoon.
Oh, the 92 cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then she has done a bunch of voice work for The Mask, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog. That's the Jewish Sonic the Hedgehog.
Johnny Quest. And most famously was the voice of Aunt May for multiple episodes of Spider-Man in 2017.
Oh, in 2017?
2017, okay. Yeah.
See, I got excited for a second because I was really into X-Men and Spider-Man's,
yeah,
animated series in the 90s.
Oh, God, that 90s series is so good.
They were both great.
So good.
Anyway, so...
So she tells... Tells Gina Regina, when you watch them, watch yourself. She then tells Mr. Franklin to come on, who argues they can't just leave Gina out here, but Mrs. Franklin quickly tells him to shut up and ask if he wants to leave or not. The two then get into the car, leaving Gina to enter the house alone. Gina slowly approaches the house, taking it in with visible nervousness. She enters to find a very nice house, but is stopped briefly to find a smoking pile of children's toys.
Which is on brand.
Just past the threshold.
Which is on brand.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I mean, that's on brand for Nightmare on Elm Street.
So, makes her way towards her old room. She comes to a mirror in the room and looks at it. Suddenly watches herself transform back into her younger self, who is played by Erica Horn. That was her first credit, but she also has a noticing credit on Linnea Quigley's Horror Workout.
Really?
She played a zombie.
She must have been somebody's daughter.
Yeah.
Like somebody in the effects world. Because remember, at that time, I believe, and I don't have any notes, but at that time, I believe Linnea was married to the effects artist, whose name's escaping me. The one from Return of the Living Dead. Steve Johnson? She was married to Steve Johnson. So that makes me think that maybe that little girl was like a friend of an effects person or something.
That
and that's
totally
how she ended
sense.
Up in Freddy's Nightmares. And then, because for those who've never seen Linnea Quigley's Horror Workout, I mean, it's just a goof off video. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's totally fun. It's got Linnea running from zombies and stuff like that. But it's definitely the kind of thing where you're like, I think anybody who's in this is like friends of friends.
Yeah, I can see that. So little Gina in the mirror states, it's just a phase, which you'll come to find out is a common phrase in this episode.
A common phrase, yes.
As we suddenly hear kids off screen teasing her, roly-poly, fat and ugly. Also a common phrase in this episode.
Oh, you'll hear it a lot.
So, repeats it several times before Gina is caught off guard by the sounds of chains rattling and growls. She flips on the light in the bedroom to reveal a young boy and girl in their pajamas, covered in dirt head to toe and chained to the wall, acting feral towards her.
Which is how you know. You're watching Freddy's Nightmare.
That is exactly how you know. So Gina begins to back out of the room as the kids suddenly break free of the chains and run after her. Gina makes it to the front door, pulling it open to reveal herself, as we come to realize that this was all just a dream. Gina has Mrs. Franklin welcome her into the home, apologizing for the wait, stating that she didn't hear the bell. Gina tells her not to worry. She just got to the door. Mrs. Franklin introduces the kids, Dolly and Ricky. Dolly, who is played by Sabrina Howes. This is her first credit. She also was in Everybody Hates Chris. Ricky, who is played by Brian Beck. This and Doogie Howser are his only credits on IMDb.
I had a feeling he was definitely not doing as much acting as the little girl was.
He's got one of my favorite lines, though, which we'll get to.
Okay. No, I'm looking forward to it.
So Doogie Howser, and like I said, Freddy's Nightmares is all he had. So Ricky and Dolly are introduced to Gina, along with Mr. Franklin, who comes out of the living room or comes into the living room. Mr. Franklin adds that Gina is subbing for Rita tonight, who informed the Franklins that Gina was a model. Gina says she's doing it to help as a way to pay through her school, and Mrs. Franklin comments that she definitely has the figure for it.
And she does.
Oh, yeah, she does. Gina's
Easy
attention.
There, Dave. Calm down.
Gina's attention is then taken by a gun cabinet in the corner displaying various rifles. Mr. Franklin, taking notice of Gina's attention, comments that they were few gifts of the academy from his misspent youth, to which Miss Franklin adds that he ranked 10th in his class but gave up his military career for her. And Mr. Franklin adds, yeah, so now I'm a lawyer, which is kind of the same thing, just no khakis. But he says it really annoyed.
Yeah, same thing, no khakis. I mean, same attitude from lawyer to soldier. I mean, one is a cold, callous killing machine doing whatever it takes to get themselves and their team to victory, even if it means destroying innocent lives.
That is true.
And the other's a soldier.
Thought that's where you were going. Well played. He reassures her there's nothing to worry about as he has them locked up and under control. The kids continue playing Super Mario as Gina and the Franklins walk towards the door. Mrs. Franklin tells her that it'll be about a 3-hour round trip, so they should be back about 1. Gina comments that she's got plenty of studying to do in the meantime, and Mr. Franklin adds that she can help herself to any food in the fridge, but Gina interrupts, stating that no thanks, she brought her own, pulling an apple from her bag, stating that she brought her own. Oh, I just said that.
Yeah, that's some mighty fine writing there, Dave.
She had it.
You went to college.
Mrs. Franklin comments that all the kids are on diets nowadays, but Gina tells her she used to be a blimp, and her answer to anxiety was to eat it, along with everything else. Mr. Franklin,
I see no problem with this answer.
Mr. Franklin comments that she's definitely cured that habit, admiring Gina from the back as they walk to the door. The Franklins leave, telling Gina to have a great time, and she adds that she's looking forward to it.
But
oh boy,
oh, The moment the parents are gone, the way the kids turn is amazing.
Gina makes her way back to Ricky and Dolly, asking them if they want to play a game, but she stops as she notices the pile of junk food in front of them on the table. Dolly calls Gina a lame-o and tells her that this is their house. They make the rules, so they eat what they want, watch what they want, and go to bed when they want.
I thought they were going to get into the Addams Family rap. Do what we want to do, say what they want to say.
Ricky then adds, damn straight.
So I want to point out, Ricky is just straight up her hype man.
Yeah. Oh,
it
yeah.
was like listening to a Louis Farrakhan speech.
You know? Oh, yeah.
And my brothers and sisters have been held back too long. Damn straight.
So Dolly continues telling Gina she gets the living room if she behaves, the kitchen when they're not in it. And don't hassle us, we won't hassle you. And finally, we get another damn straight
damn
from Ricky.
Damn straight!
So that's two damn straights from this kid.
I know, and unlike Louis Farrakhan, they didn't say anything anti-Semitic.
That is very true. She then closes it with, get it, got it, good. Taking the words in, Gina clearly is having issues with this and begins to remind herself that she's in control. The next scene opens with a shot of the apple core on the table where Gina sits lounging on the couch, talking to Rita on the phone, who's asking how's it's going. Gina tells her it's unreal and tells her the kids don't want to be friends, going to state that they've tripped her, trapped her, and booby-trapped the staircase with slinkies. It's a horror show.
And I want to say, okay, this is the educational portion of the show, which is why we get government funding. So, I'm pretty sure, now, I've not babysat much.
Mm-hmm.
Have you babysat much?
A couple times.
So, I'm pretty sure, though, from what I've read about babysitting, you're supposed to show up and just immediately shiv the biggest, baddest guy to show you're not supposed to be fucked with.
100%.
Also, I heard if you're ever in prison, just have lots of juice boxes and activities planned.
They love
that. And you're just set.
They love that.
And I'm positive I didn't get those two confused.
No, there's no way. No, I 100%. I think you're dead on with
that. I have
that.
A photographic memory.
Rita laughs, telling her it sounds like a good time, but reminds her that she has to stay in control and reminds her that she knows that. Gina tells her luckily it's getting late and it's time to put the little darlings to bed. Rita wishes her luck and tells her that she'll see her in the morning before hanging up. Gina calls to Ricky and Dolly, telling them it's time for bed, but the kids give no answer to her. She calls again, but suddenly the lights go out in the room, putting Gina into darkness. But a light suddenly cuts through the darkness as the gun cabinet in the living room lights up. Gina walks over to examine it and picks up a combat knife that is sitting on the ledge outside of the gun cabinet.
Because that's where it would be if you had little children running
around.
And
then makes her way towards the kitchen where banging sounds are occurring. She opens the door to find the kitchen also dark, but she hits one of the switches on the breaker, turning the lights back on, revealing the kitchen to be absolutely wrecked with food splattered and thrown everywhere.
Yeah.
Angrily, she screams.
It looks like blood.
It totally looks like
blood. The kids look like they're covered in blood.
Yeah. So she angrily screams for Ricky and Dolly to show themselves front and center right now. The kids slowly rise from behind the kitchen counter, also covered in food. Both Dolly and Ricky accuse one another of making the mess, but Gina interrupts, saying that it's not the mess that concerns her, but instead the food choice, commenting that the junk food is high fat, low fiber, heart attack food.
Yeah.
The kids then fire back at Gina with a chant from her dream, roly poly, fat and ugly.
Now, I gotta say something.
Yeah.
I would say I'm the show's expert on bullying.
That's very true.
On being bullied.
Yeah.
And also, I'm a very good bully.
Yes, also true again.
You were bullied very much at school.
Oh, I was. Oh, I was heavily bullied.
What was the worst incident?
I got my detached retina from a boxing incident that happened at a kid's house.
Well, first of all, that doesn't count if it didn't happen at school.
It was still bullying.
But you were in mutual combat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. See, I had the library door opened into my face, and it almost cost
split
me my front teeth, and I was bleeding everywhere. We never found out who did it. I don't think they were trying to hurt me that bad.
Yeah.
I think that they got scared when they saw how much I was bleeding and just ran
away.
They thought it was just going to be funny.
Yeah.
And then there was all the times I was spit on the school bus and all the good stuff.
Yes,
so anyway, my point is, my point to all of this, and your perfect little fucking life, is... is roly poly fat and ugly doesn't even rhyme or have any catchiness at all. And that's why I took it upon myself to think there's got to be better ones.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What about Gina 2x4 can't fit through the kitchen door?
Okay. Yeah.
That one's pretty
good.
That's
not bad.
Or what about Chubby Gina has bad luck, jumped in the air and got stuck? That's a pretty good
one. Not bad, too.
Or Large Lady Gina, big as a whale, broke a truck stop, weight, station scale.
Oh my God. Are you proud of these?
I'm so proud of these.
I figured you would be.
Are you kidding?
I figured you would be.
Are you kidding? I have peaked, not just in podcasting, not just in show business, but in my life with that. You're all welcome.
So the kids go on with Roly Poly Fat and Ugly, which stuns Gina as she asks them, how could you know that? The kids don't reply, so Gina tells them to go upstairs and pick out a book. She'll come up to read it to them as soon as she's done cleaning the mess, which, by the way, how long is she anticipating that mess to take cleaning?
I have no idea, but if she's anything like me, I have an anxiety disorder, so every mess looks like... I look at, like, a sink will have, like, 3-5 dishes in it, and I'll be like, well, that's an afternoon. I actually learned that that's why I'm a bad housekeeper, is because it'll be like, oh, you need to vacuum the rugs. It'll be like, well, I don't have a day to do that. And then when I do it, I'm like, oh, right, that takes 11 minutes. Duh.
Regardless, this kitchen is fucking wrecked. Like, it's not gonna be like a 15-minute job. Like, it's a day. It's going to take a day.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, it's not great.
So she tells the kids she'll be up as soon as she's done cleaning up the mess, which will probably be by Tuesday at this point. The kids walk off and the camera zooms into a crunchy boy potato chip bag.
Everything's boy in the show, and I'm here for it, because we had Beefy Boy, then Cheesy Boy, and now we got a Crunchy Boy.
So, for those keeping score at home, we are almost 10 minutes into this episode when we finally meet Freddy in his domain, as suddenly Freddy's claw comes into the shot, grabbing the bag of potato chips, stating, old habits die hard. Bet our babysitter can't eat just one. He then proceeds to put his fingers into his mouth, pulling out a whole uneaten potato chip that he sets on the counter.
They reversed motion.
Yeah, they reversed it.
And I feel bad for Freddy, though. He's gone bulimic from all that pressure. I mean, he was at the height of his stardom, and he really felt like he had to be thin, you know? He wanted that Hemsworth body, so he was dehydrating and burning his flesh off.
This is going to show my age for a second.
Oh yeah, it is.
It reminds me. Do you know about the ASDF YouTube movies? The little 10-second clips that were all the sketch drawings and whatnot. They came out 2009, maybe 2008.
Probably.
Well, there's a hilarious one where this woman walks up to this chick and she's like, "Ma'am, you have to pay for your food." She's like, "No, I don't," and burps up the whole hamburger onto the platter. That's what that reminded me of.
Ew. Well, thanks for making my day substantially worse, David.
Back in the kitchen, Gina has finished cleaning up the kitchen, begging out loud for the Franklins to return home so she can go home in turn. The phone begins to ring, and Gina answers it to hear Cindy Franklin's voice. She asks Gina if she's enjoying herself, and Gina replies with, oh, too much, which prompts Mrs. Franklin to reply that she's happy to hear that because Mr. Franklin has had too much to drink, and she cannot see at night, so they would like Gina to stay the whole night, and they will be home in the morning.
Too much to drink!
Gina tells her.
That is the first reference to D.D. King. You've heard that song, right?
Yes.
You know, D.D. King is D.D. Ramone's solo career. Don't look it up. Anyway, continue, David.
So, Gina tells her that she has class early in the morning, but Mrs. Franklin tells her not to worry. They'll be back before breakfast, adding they'll make it up to her. She then hangs up, and Gina repeats, control, 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 and states that she's starting to lose it. She looks down to see the lone potato chip that Freddie left for her. And taking a hesitant bite, Gina quickly consumes and clearly remembers how grape chips are.
I wish it had cut, it had zoomed in really fast to her eye and showed her pupil expand when she bit into the chip. And I want to mention, because I know I've made a lot of jokes and I'm going to make a lot more jokes, fat jokes and stuff. I am not a skinny man, and I have food issues myself, but this shit's funny.
Yeah. You're not wrong. You are not wrong at all.
Thanks.
Not well. Ah, now I did a
Thanks,
boner.
Thanks, Louie.
I pulled a boner.
Fucking Louie.
Ricky and Dolly shout from upstairs, asking her, "Where's our story?" As we then cut to the bedroom, where Dolly adds, "Might as well read it ourselves." She begins with "Once upon a time," as the camera reveals the storybook to be Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
We cut back to the kitchen, where Gina, reminded of the deliciousness of junk food, is stuffing her face with all different kinds of snacks, telling the kids that she's coming, she'll be just a few minutes, adding, if I can fit through the door, as she continues to eat more and more snacks all around the table. She's interrupted by the sound of a voice telling her, wait, as she stuffs a chip into her mouth.
I love what David never does voices. That was amazing.
Because that, wait! This one, oh God, this one's good. The voice continues telling Gina, you can't be full yet. Gina turns around to see on the counter that a piece of pizza, a hot dog, and a Twinkie have come to life and are talking to her. And when I say that they're talking...
They're puppets.
They're puppets.
Yes. And all I thought immediately was, hey, I've seen this anti-drug commercial before.
You're not wrong. The pizza then asks her, you've had your fun, now we're history? As the hot dog pipes up, mocking her previous comment, saying, low fiber, high fat, no one's perfect, bubblehead.
And I want to say, this is why I eat all the junk food.
Yeah.
Because they never shut up unless you do. And they didn't even get to starting to talk about politics.
That's true.
That's when I'm like, all right, Twinkie, like, you really seem to think you're so right. Well, now I'm eating you.
So the Twinkie adds, yeah, who you calling heart attack food, roly-poly? Gina replies back to the food that is just an expression, but the food isn't having it, and mocks her, saying, yeah, sure's all's forgiven, before they invite her over to finish her, saying, you know you want to. The food eggs her on before they begin to attack her, flying off the counter at her. The pizza jumps off and latches onto her face, and we cut to the first commercial break, which... I'm going to make sure that we mention those in this episode.
They're so weird.
Oh my God.
They keep showing clips and just photoshopping Freddy's into on top of faces, or putting him into the car next to them.
That was my favorite. That was like Svengoolie level.
Yeah, and it's like not convincing at all. It's meant to be like, what my favorite is, it'll just be like a face of a character, but then Freddy's smiling face gets put over it at like a wrong angle.
Oh my God.
It's so bizarre. I would give anything to talk to the post-production people behind Freddy's Nightmares. Because I have a feeling that at this point they were like, well, we figured out we had no boss, and we wanted to have some fun because we were working long hours. That's my guess. God.
So Gina comes to, sitting at the kitchen table, realizing it was all a dream, looking at the clock to reveal it's 11:15. She looks down to also realize an open bag of potato chips sits on the table, now empty. She goes to the kids' room, apologizing she dozed off, but is ready to read to them. Entering the room, though, there's a silence and no kids. Gina calls them, telling them that they can play pin the tail on the sitter because apparently they love that game.
I mean, did you look at her? I wouldn't mind playing pin the tail on the sitter.
A mini serving robot makes its way over to Gina's foot. Let me repeat that again. A mini serving robot makes its way over to Gina's foot with a snack cake on a tray, offering it to her, stating,
"Happy birthday, Bobby.
How about a snack?" Gina agrees and takes the snack cake, taking a bite, and then turns around to see a trail of snack cakes leading out of the room to the living room. Convinced it's the kids playing a joke on her, she tells them very funny and follows the trail with no sign of the kids. She stops and decides to take a bite of a sandwich in the living room, biting it and telling the kids that playtime is over, but there's still no sight or sound of Ricky or Dolly. Suddenly, she hears Dolly scream and runs off to find her, calling her name. The phone begins to ring again, so Gina answers it to find Cindy Franklin on the other line, asking or telling her that she forgot to tell the kids goodnight and would like Gina to go get them. Gina lies, telling her the kids are already in bed asleep, which surprises Miss Franklin, who questions, before midnight? I'm glad you and the children have reached an understanding.
Yeah.
Gina suddenly is interrupted by seeing another vision of herself as a kid with a huge array of snacks behind her on basically like what looks like a display.
Yeah.
And again, her little self says, it's just a phase. Then the vision fades away right before her eyes again. Back on the phone, Mrs. Franklin adds, oh, just one thing. When you watch them, watch yourself.
Yeah, well, she's not wrong, kids.
Before hanging up, Gina continues to frantically search the house, asking the kids why they're doing this to her. She ends up back in the kitchen and finds that all the food is now gone and she's starving. She repeats her control mantra once again and grabs a phone to hear a gentleman's voice say, Porker's Anonymous Hotline.
Porker's Anonymous! Porker's Anonymous!
Or if you're watching on Tubi, the captions say, Worker's Anonymous.
I did notice that. You know, Porker's Anonymous sounds like you're treating a different addiction.
Yeah. What's that?
Well, let's not move on. Let's move on from this, okay? Let's just get going.
Goes on to say, I'm totally out of control. I don't want to eat anymore. I don't want to be fat again. The gentleman calmly tells her to remain calm, go to the freezer, and roast a side of beef and eat it. It's just a phase. That's exactly what he says.
And pretty much how he says it, yeah.
This distresses Gina, and she tries to do a heavy breathing control exercise, but we cut to a dog, Freddy, who comes into the kitchen to find Gina eating directly out of his bowl. The dog begins to whine, which catches Gina's attention.
It's a gigantic dog bowl that says Freddy on the side.
Yes.
And she's just horking down wet dog food.
So she gets the attention of the dog when she turns her face and reveals that Gina is now morphed into a full-on monster with rough, scaly skin, big eyes, sharp teeth, almost like a monster pig is what it was.
She looks like a monster boar.
Yeah.
Like a, yeah.
So we now have a babysitter that's turned into a monster. She growls back at Freddy, the dog, who whimpers at the sight of her and runs off. Gina looks down at Freddy's diss, which before her eyes turns from wet brown dog food into a moist bowl of maggots and worms.
And then she gets grossed out.
Yes.
As if the dog food... I mean, that was fine.
Well, you and I have had this conversation. Like, we both have pets that have wet food. I hate touching it. You hate touching it.
I hate being around it. I do. I think it's disgusting.
So Gina, grossed out, violently pushes the bowl away from her and begins to cough and gag before getting up and making her way to the sink, where she retches and coughs up something white in fabric. She washes it off to reveal a white bow, just like Dolly was wearing in the previous scene. Suddenly, Ricky appears telling Gina, "You ate my big sister!" Gina turns around and retches some more, coughing up an entire severed finger, and then looks back at Ricky, who screams and runs off.
Something about the babysitter becoming a fat pig cannibal monster is both, not even both, it's brilliant, terrifying, and very offensive.
Oh yeah.
And I love it.
I was watching this last night, like my notes on my phone, because like I said, I watched this twice. So I watch it once to get the general idea, write my joke notes, and then I watch it again. Once in the tub. I literally have a note in my phone right now that just says this episode is fucking awesome with exclamation points right around this time.
Well, the monster, because next up she starts stalking around the house,
yes,
you know, looking to eat the kid. And the image of her, and I feel like every other shot she's bigger.
Bigger,
like
she's, yeah. Like, no, she's definitely chunkier. Is. Yeah.
The monster stalking the kids around the house, honestly, like really gave me Tales from the Dark Side vibes.
100%.
Like I literally was like, okay, because Tales from the Dark Side would always have like a monster whose makeup was maybe a little too advanced for their budget, so mm-hmm. it looked just a little off, but was still really cool looking. Mm-hmm. They liked monsters a lot on, yeah, Tales from the Dark Side. So that, I literally was like, this feels like a Tales from the Dark Side episode when it was stomping around.
So Ricky runs off screaming no. Gina begins to chase him, calling his name innocently like she did earlier when looking for the kids, adding, "Ollie Ollie Oxenfree." Up in his room, Ricky has now donned camouflage pajama set, complete with a red bandana tied around his head like Rambo, and he's putting black under his eyes.
Oh, yeah. No, he's getting ready for war.
He's going all Deadly Games, and I love it. He hears thuds as Gina searches for him downstairs. Gina calls to him, telling him she's not going to hurt him, just based him a little, before laughing.
Well...
She tells Ricky it's time for his story before bursting through the bedroom door, exclaiming, "You made me what I am, so here I am." Ricky is now
Why
hiding.
Why is she from New York now?
I don't know.
All right, continue.
Ricky's hiding on the other side of the room and smashes her foot with a radio after Gina exclaims, "I smell finger food." This episode's so good. Ricky runs off and Gina goes after him, stating, "You're not getting away." She locks the front door deadbolt, adding, "No one leaves until I'm full," which you heard in the intro, of course. And we cut to Ricky cowering under a desk with a phone, telling the other person to send someone. Gina interrupts at the other end, stating, "Why bother? There's no way in or out," as she throws the phone down.
Oh, yeah.
She then tells Ricky it didn't have to be this way, and they did this to her. She was doing so well, but then they played games with her and made her nervous to make her eating, concluding that they made her this, and she exclaims through tears before the children's chants of "Roly-poly, fat and ugly" start up again.
Which still don't rhyme and still aren't clever.
Gina then looks out the window to see a flashback of her younger self being bullied by the kids calling and chanting "Roly-poly" continuously to her. She watches as little Gina walks up to the front of the house and looks back at her, feeling the pain. Gina then begins to sob, but stops when she hears Ricky trying to unlock the gun cabinet. She makes her way into the living room to get him as he hurls a stool at her. Catching it, Gina begins to gnaw on the stool while Ricky fumbles with keys for the lock. Gina throws the stool aside, so Ricky throws her a book, which she also takes a bite out of before throwing it aside. Quickly, she grabs the rug out from under Ricky, God, who falls to the floor with a grenade in his hand. Yes, yes, a child has a grenade.
Yeah. Well, didn't you have a grenade when you were a kid?
I'm not answering that.
Smart. That's smart.
Quickly,
as your attorney, I think that was wise.
Hitting the floor, the grenade rolls as Gina begins to eat the rug, a stitch at a time, spinning Ricky with each bite she takes. Ricky keeps fumbling for the grenade and gets it, spinning at the right time to pop it right into Gina's mouth and pull the pin out. Gina watches in defeat as her stomach grumbles and shakes before exploding. And now when I say exploding, what they do is they white out the screen and they shake the picture back and
forth.
Yeah.
It's pretty cheap.
You don't get to see her explode, but you get the impression of it. The Franklin fans have then returned home as the house is filled with smoke. They're suddenly calling to Ricky and asking, where's Gina and Dolly? Mrs. Franklin calls to Gina repeatedly, but we begin to hear a voice also telling Gina to wake up. We then see little Gina wake up as her mom, who is Mrs. Franklin, shakes her lightly awake and Gina tells her mom she had a horrible nightmare where she was all grown up babysitting for two awful kids. Her mother reassures her it's okay now and it was just a dream, but Gina continues that she was so beautiful and her mom reminds her that she is beautiful. Gina then adds, I was thin, Mom, really thin. Her mom consoles her, telling her not to listen to the kids at school and it's just a phase. Mr. Franklin enters with the new sitter who looks exactly like older Gina, which excites little Gina. The sitter says hi and what's cooking, as we are then shown an image that Gina is imagining of the babysitter tied like a roasted pig with an apple in her mouth on a platter, while little Gina sits behind her with a knife and fork, wearing a lobster big, commenting, yummy.
Yummy.
We then cut back to reality as Mr. Franklin tells the sitter maybe later she can read Gina a story, to which the sitter tells her that she brought her own, pulling out a book, asking, is Hansel and Gretel okay?
And I love, Freddy let her know she could improve herself, but also she's just a fat monster on the inside.
The camera zooms into the title as we fade into an image of flames. And folks, hold on for Freddy's intro into this, or the closer in this scene.
Oh my God.
Because we come into Freddy's domain as he's being spun on a spit roast and states, little Gina won't stay little for long. After all, you are who you eat. It is then revealed that Freddy is being spit roasted by a skeleton who is slowly spinning him over the fire.
He's turning the wheel and he's just holding on to it going, ah!
And that's the end of the Ace story.
It sure is. And I want to mention, because this is one of the episodes we've done where it is very clear that y'all want to see this.
Mm.
So remember, we watch these in America, in the United States of America, on Tubi TV, TubiTV.com or Tubi.tv or Roku app, whatever. Completely free with commercials. Make sure to check it out. And the link, as always, is in the description of the show if you want to watch this yourself and you're in the United States.
Trust us, you want to watch this.
Or you have a VPN. Yeah, you do. But now it's time for the B story. For those uninitiated, the B story of Freddy's Nightmares is a little different from other B stories. The B story is flat out split down the middle and rarely combines,
yeah,
because in some areas they would air a 22-minute episode, and in other areas they air a 44-minute episode. So often the B story feels kind of like an afterthought and features side characters from the A story. This one is no exception.
No exception at all. So our B story begins back in the Franklin's home. Mr. Franklin pours a cup of coffee and walks over to the table where Mrs. Franklin and Gina are seated. He holds up a broken Walkman, asking Gina if she borrowed it again. Gina, knowing she did wrong, sits in silence, so Mr. Franklin continues, stating next time she borrows it, to put it somewhere that he can't step on it, and she needs to stop leaving things wherever she likes. Gina tells him, sorry, Daddy, before Mrs. Franklin comments that somebody walked up or woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. He goes on to state he's been using the Walkman to keep all his notes for 3 weeks of briefing on it, and drops the broken Walkman on the table loudly. Gina, upset, gets up and walks away from the table. Cindy levels with Ken, telling him she knows he's under pressure, but please don't take it out on them. Ken comments that it's a big case, and if he plays it right, he can make partner, asking her, isn't that what you want? Cindy questions if he's insinuating that she forced him into law school. He adds, well, it wasn't his first choice. Cindy then tells him now's not the time for that can of worms, and he needs to take Gina to school. Ken tells her he can't, he's already late as it is, and Cindy tells him that she has a million things to do today, begging him not to whine, as Ken begins to argue how he's being sick of being taken for granted.
Aww.
What a nice life we have so far.
Mio. My Mio.
I can't believe I missed that. I'm so mad.
I can. You never cease to disappoint.
Ken then goes into an argument, sarcastically stating that men don't need sympathy, spending lives slaving and breaking backs, never complaining. She tells him don't be so hard and things could be a lot worse than they actually are, but yeah. Ken continues about how he finds it ridiculous that he has an earlier bedtime than when he was 9 years old, until Cindy interrupts him, asking, who are you kidding? Commenting that he never wants to go out. He's always too tired. Ken fires back with, yeah, did you ever wonder why? Which I love that delivery.
Yeah, I know that's such good a sarcastic stuff. That's really dick. Good stuff. Yeah.
So,
do you ever wonder why?
He goes on to say he doesn't enjoy the grind. In mornings like this, he wouldn't mind waking up being someone else.
Oh, man. I wish I was someone else.
Cindy, hearing this, calls out, stating, typical male midlife bull. You want the singles life. Cruising the Caribbean with some 20-year-old. We'll face it, Ken. You weren't cut out for life in the fast lane.
Oh.
Hearing this, Ken gets up from the table, stating, you don't even know who I am anymore. She tries to go after him, but he walks on. And folks, once again, If there's one thing about these episodes in regards to Freddy's appearance, the camera pans over to a counter where a cereal box of Flaky-O's sits with a general-looking figure on it, with a speech bubble saying, "Eat 'em." Suddenly before our eyes, Freddy appears on the box as it morphs into Freddy-O's with the tagline, "Slice 'em."
Yeah, and Freddy is just on the box, live action.
Yes.
He's just green-screened onto the box.
And he states, "Breakfast of Casualties." Yes, the fast lane is a dead end. When you're stuck on cruise control.
That was just kind of word salad. Like, he just said a bunch of car sayings. Fast lane, cruise control, dead end.
So we then cut back to Ken, who's driving down the road in a Mercedes on his way to work. We cut to a speeding Corvette being chased by police, speeding towards Ken. He tries to swerve, but the Corvette speeds on as suddenly Ken's vision fades and he comes to sitting in his car as we hear the ambience of crash sounds. Suddenly, a man played by Elliot Easton gets into the car with a gun and points it at Ken, telling him, "Drive, yuppie, or your complexion gets a new look." He cocks the gun's hammer and holds the pistol steady and gives a kissy face towards Ken.
He's pretty handsome.
Ken asks before speeding off with the cops behind him. Ken asks what before speeding off with the cops behind him. We cut to the police station where Ken has been arrested and is being fingerprinted, asking what the hell has he been charged with. He demands to know why he's there and where his ID or his ID or wallet. He then asks the officers if they've questioned the other guy in the car, but a cop grabs him from behind, pulling him in, asking what other guy. The next scene, Ken is in the cop's office tied to a chair.
Well, yeah.
Tied to a chair.
Well, he's apprehended.
Like a 60s detective film, tied to a chair in a police office.
Louis, calm down. Your blood pressure.
No. I looked at that last night and I was like, why is he tied to a chair? So he's telling the cop that it was a guy in Italian clothes that was the guy with the gun. The cop tells him he almost believes him, but tells him it's the same story with his type, always blaming someone else for the situation. Ken argues what situation, and the cop goes on to add that he had one good one, but he wanted out. Now he's in his situation and telling him he wants to be different. Welcome to the Great Equalizer. Ken tells him to call his wife and she can explain everything, but the cop goes on to add that he can't control everyone's decisions. His kind makes him sick, adding, "No phone calls for you."
No civil rights for you, pal. You know, if he's lucky, he'll get out just like Freddy did for not getting his rights.
For the record, too, I want to point out that right at this scene is where we get the score for this episode, which is basically just a seedy jazz theme the entire time.
Except every time it makes it clear he's someone else.
Yeah.
It sounds like the Back to the Future theme a little bit, like those jingles. Like when Marty realizes it's not 1985 anymore. Like, they do that like every time it's clear that he's not who he used to be.
Oh God. So Ken questions why, and the cop orders to take this joke to a cell. Get him out of my sight. Ken gets put in a cell and turns around to see a heavy-set, filthy man with gapped teeth lounging on the cell cot behind him, who also makes a kissy face at Ken and motions him over to lay with him. I had to pause the episode last night because for a split second I thought it was Larry Fetston.
Yeah, but, well, you know, that's pretty harsh, because my note is, did you notice how many active sores and lesions he had on his face? It's literally like, he goes into the cell, you see the cellmate. The cellmate is literally laying...
Lounging.
He's laying.
He's drawing me like one of your French girls posing.
Yeah, he's laying like, what's his name? Dr. Malcolm. When he looks all like
Goldblum.
Sexy. Goldblum, all sexy. Like, his chest is completely exposed. You see his chest hair, but his face is covered in active sores and lesions. And he's just like, "Hi." And then the lawyer is immediately, the main character is immediately like, "I want to confess. Yes. Just let me know what it was that he did."
So he literally says, "I'll confess. Just tell me what I did." Later, Ken is led back to the office as the camera pans up to a very nice pair of women's legs. Ken is told his lady bailed him out, and Ken states, "Yeah, my wife, thank God." But quickly changes his tune when he doesn't see her. He looks around asking, "Where is she?" As one of the cop comments, "Yeah, real comedian." A voice pipes up asking, "So, Vinny, miss me?" Revealing the older Gina from A Story. The cop tells her, "He's all yours." Ken looks back at Gina with confusion, and the next shot, Ken and Gina are driving down the road. He thanks Gina for getting him out, telling her to take him home to his wife. Gina tells him to lose the act, she's not the cops, and he asks if the office sent her to get him, and Gina asks him, "You're not kidding, are you?" He asks her name, and Gina reminds him, it's Gina. He loves her name, remember? Ken comments that it's his daughter's name, and Gina comments, daughter, wow. Commenting on how jail really did a number on him, they pull up to Ken's office of Dewey Cheatham and Hal.
Because now we're just in a vaudeville act. Literally, the sign is Dewey Cheatham and Hal.
Yes, it is.
If you haven't heard that joke, it's because you're not from the Borscht Belt in the 1950s. But Dewey Cheatham and Hal.
So Ken Franklin is listed
on
the sign.
Tip your waitress and try the veal.
Try the veal. There we go. The door guard named Paul asks, how can he help? Ken tells him not to worry. It's okay because he's Ken Franklin and this is his spot. The guard tells him to get lost because the real Ken Franklin is on his way. Ken asks the guard, who, like I said, is named Paul, and asks him what he's talking about. Tells him to cut the humor out, but the guard grabs him, telling him he doesn't have
a
sense of humor.
It gets not nice because all the people come out from the office. None of them know who he is.
Nope.
They're completely unaware of who this guy is, so he decides, I'm going home then. Like, just take me home. Just take me home.
So he pulls up to his house. Ken exits the car and walks to the door, knocking since he forgot his keys. Little Gina answers the door, and Ken asks her if school was let out early today. Little Gina freaks out and calls for mommy, while Ken asks if she's upset because he didn't take her to school. Cindy appears, telling Little Gina to go inside and ask Ken what does he want. Ken tells Cindy he's had a day, and Cindy continues asking him who he is and how does he know her name.
All I wanted in the world, David.
Yes.
Was for Freddie to walk up from behind her with like a pipe and just be like, is this man bothering you, dear? Get out of here before I call the constable.
God damn it. Why?
I know.
Why?
I was sitting there, but no, it's the crook.
It's the crook.
It's the crook who walks up behind and does the whole like, who's this guy, honey?
Yeah, the criminal in the car appears in the doorway, asking Ken if he's bothering his wife. Ken questions, your wife and kid? The man shoves Ken to the ground, telling him to take a hike, pretty pleased before making another kiss motion at him, like earlier. Ken realizes and freaks out, stating, you're the guy, before the door is shut in his face. He looks back at Gina, who tells him, ready when you are, Vin. The two are next shown walking in a very lavish home. And when I say a lavish home, there's a fucking tree in the middle of the living room or entryway, whatever you want to call it.
Wow, you don't even know the words for nice houses.
No, I don't.
You mean the foyer?
Foyer, that's it. Thank you.
I'm sorry, foyer?
Foyer, yes, the foyer.
Foyer?
So Gina comments, where do you think we are? Ken replies with a surprise me, and Gina informs him that it's his house, adding, it's his empire. He built this. Ken asks who is Vinny, and Gina begins to undress at the bottom of the steps, stating Vinny is her lover. She moves up the steps, removing more clothes, as Ken notices pictures on a shelf of him and Gina.
Look at this photograph.
He finds his keys on the shelf along with them and comments his keys. Gina tells him that he left them there this morning, his wallet too, which is in the bedroom. She motions to the bedroom before removing her shirt, exposing her bare back as she walks into the bedroom.
And I've got to say, we had a severe lack of sleaze for the last few episodes.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I was about to call the hospitals and see if Gil Adler was in them or something, because where was the sleaze? Where was the fun?
So Ken enters the bedroom, commenting his clothes are in the closet, and Gina, who is now dressed in a black nightie, tells him, what'd you expect? He comments that he's misplaced his life, but Gina tells him to cheer up. He doesn't need to expect anything. That's what she loves about him. So spontaneous. Mr. Adventure.
Mr. Adventure.
He asks about the pictures downstairs, commenting he looked happy in them, and asks, was he happy? Gina confirms that he was. He had just hit a big score, and they were sailing off to the Keys. She then adds that wife and kids were for suckers, is what he said, asking him, has he changed his mind on that stance? Ken confirms he hasn't changed his mind, just lost it. Completely. He picks
great
up the wallet.
Too. That's just a great line.
He picks up the wallet, commenting that it's his information, but it's wrong. Wrong address. Gina adds, if it's this address, it's not wrong. He then picks up the broken Walkman, and Gina tells him sorry about the headphones, but she warned him not to put him next to the bed because he gets so rough.
Oh, wait, sorry.
Ken questions, me? Rough?
Wait, no, more.
Gina tells him he's an animal, a sexual beast, and she embraces him and kisses him on the head and his neck as he comments he never thought anything exciting would happen to him. Turn 40 and it's all over. Gina crawls onto him, or 50, yeah. Gina crawls onto him, pushing him onto the bed, telling him she'll help him find his way out of the woods. The camera then pans over to the window and fades, showing time passing. We then come to and hear Gina on the phone saying, he's all yours, humped, primed, and ready.
Okay, so
take him.
First of all, David, the closed captions lied to you. She did not say humped. She said pumped.
I know it said pumped, but it works.
Because the pumped and primed are a thing. Yeah. But that being said, I don't know how I feel about the phrase pumped, primed, and ready in that context.
Take him.
I just say she just had sex with him, and then she says he's pumped, primed, and ready. It's like, well, you're not wrong.
The camera pans to the bed where we see a sleeping Ken. We then see a masked figure enter a bedroom and open fire on the bed, spraying it with bullets.
And how? Just like letting it have it.
The figure then lifts the blankets to reveal that Ken put pillows in the bed to show a body impression. He emerges from behind the gunman, hitting him over the head with a lamp, shattering it.
Which is the only moment I just realized that they kind of pay off that he was in the military.
Funny you bring that up, because I was thinking that exact thing last night where it was like, oh shit, oh wait, yeah, he's a badass. Like,
why would he be? Oh right, he was in the army. Yeah.
So he runs downstairs where Gina is filing her nails as she comments, well, that was fast. Told you his kind wouldn't be any trouble. She then turns to see Ken as he grabs her, stating, it wasn't. The two fight, and Ken throws Gina onto a pool table with a gun at her head,
telling her, Mini Uzi. With his finger on the trigger.
Yes.
I hope he doesn't sneeze. Because you can, with a Mini Uzi, you can very easily accidentally put 4 or 5 in someone's head.
She says, he says, I think I'm beginning to get a grip on life. You think I like feeling this weapon in my hand? So don't do that again. Gina begs to be let go, and Ken says he wants answers. Who is he? What's going on? And Gina tells him that he did it all to himself. Ken argues that this isn't him, this isn't his life, and Gina informs him that he made Vinny what he is. He made him up. Ken releases Gina and begins to question things, stating he was turning 40, he wanted to change, was he supposed to die for it? Sounds of cars emerge outside, and Ken looks out the window, commenting they're everywhere. He asks her what she's done, and Gina tells him that if he wants out, he can get out right now, but it's his choice, offering the keys to her car. Ken asks her why should he trust her, and she states, because I'm the only game in town, toots. The keys swing in front of Ken in her hand, and he grabs them and makes his way out back as she comments, no one's out there. Ken leaves, and Gina dials the phone, telling the person at the other end, he's taking the car. Relax, it'll all be over soon.
Yeah.
Exhausted, Ken drives down the road, contemplating his next move, telling himself to relax and maybe try his house again. He fumbles with the radio, only getting static, but then suddenly picks up a police van of a suspect speeding into a residential area.
And he doesn't even click that they're talking about him.
Nope.
He's like, oh, well, what does that matter to me?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Like, I hate this song. Ken comments, not his problem, but stops, and he realizes he's in his neighborhood and states he was miles from here. How is this possible?
And it's daytime now.
Yeah.
Like, and not like silly mistake. It's dream logic. It suddenly changed to daytime.
So well done. Suddenly, police sirens sound, but none are visible. He begins to freak out, wondering what is going on. He tries to brake, but then realizes that the brakes are cut. Suddenly, we're back as Ken's driving in his Mercedes from the beginning of the episode, the white Corvette speeding back into frame with the cops behind him, just like the opening. Ken goes to swerve, but runs right into the Corvette as the crash sounds echo.
Fight. They do the thing.
The cops.
Do the arms. No. Shut the fuck up.
Okay.
They do the arms over their face thing where it cuts.
Oh, yeah.
And he arms over his face, and they cut to the other guy. And he puts arms, and they both arms. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
You're absolutely
how there are
right.
All these movies where people put their arms over their face when they're crashing.
They're crashing.
I love that trope. So I had to mention it. Go on. Sorry.
The cops get out of their car and go to the accident. We then see the aftermath of paramedics and cops. Well, one paramedic comments, this one's fine. Let's go check on the others. Ken rises off the gurney asking, what about him? He walks over to where a group of people have gathered and looks down to see himself with more facial hair as the paramedic comments he's finished and to cover him up. Ken begins to freak out and shouts, no, I'm alive. Continually arguing he's alive, he catches his reflection in the ambulance mirror, showing the carjacker from earlier. He repeats, this isn't me, looking into the mirror several times. As the other man, Ken walks to the paramedic telling him, this isn't me, and he wants his old life back. He wants to be alive. Suddenly, Ken comes to being shocked with paddles by life on a gurney, and he's banged up and bleeding. Ken calls for Cindy, who comes over and embraces him, and he asks her, you're my wife, right? And Cindy replies, forever.
And I want to say, I mean, this is checking a lot of extra anthology cliches.
Yeah.
Like, looked in the mirror and it's somebody else.
Yep.
He's standing there where they're all like, we don't know if he's going to live, and then he looks at the guy and it's him.
Yeah.
So
she tells him that she was taking Gina to school when they saw him hit the car. It's then revealed that Vinny LaFleur, a known criminal, was in a high-speed pursuit from police when he ran into Ken Franklin, Who lives on 355 Elm Street?
Elm Street, baby!
He ends stating to tell them we have a crash victim and the suspect is DOA. The episode ends as we pan down to a road flare burning brightly red. We then cut to Freddy, who's dressed as a psycho patrolman with the helmet and jacket,
yeah,
who fills out a ticket and states, "Remember, the life you save may be your own. He then places the ticket on the skeleton, snaps his fingers as the ticket bursts into flames on the skeleton's ribcage, and laughs. And that, my friends, is episode 19, Missing Persons.
It upsettingly introduces the idea of the Freddy cop.
Oh, this isn't good.
Guys, okay, Freddy's coming over here. Just act natural.
Hey, bitch.
Hey, Freddy.
How you doing?
I don't care how you're doing.
No, I'm kidding. I actually need a favor from you guys.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be?
Well, I'm getting ready to take my police exam. I don't know if you saw, but you know, I bought the gear first because it was on sale. Because it was on a corpse. And so I wanted to get practice in. So do you think maybe we could do like a interaction?
I'm not into it.
A bad idea.
Okay, so here we go. You just been pulled over.
Uh huh.
Okay. Good evening, sir.
Hi.
Sir. Good evening, sir.
Hello.
Hands on the wheel, please.
Okay.
Where I can see them.
Okay.
Higher. Higher up.
Okay.
Wait, is that what a wheel is? No, hands on the wheel.
Hands on the wheel.
Thank you.
Okay.
So do you know why I pulled you over tonight?
No.
Really?
No, not at all.
I should have been paying attention. Well, I pulled you over because there's an open container in your vehicle.
That's my ramen.
Yeah, that's sad.
Okay.
So you can't just drive around with a cup noodle like that. What if a child saw?
I guess.
A beautiful, succulent child.
Freddie,
look, I'm going to give you a warning today because I'm having a good day and because you're showing a little bit of leg.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you right now.
Uh-huh.
You be safe out there. I don't want to have to do this again. So you take care. Oh, I found this pizza cutter, by the way.
Ah, again.
And do me a favor. Take care. Be safe. And please, don't dream and drive.
He went a long way for that joke.
Is literally... not the worst cop I've met.
No, I'll give him that. I'll give him that.
Well, bye, Freddy.
Bye, Freddy.
Oh, to protect and swerve. I don't get it either.
Well, so shall we rate this one?
Oh, boy. All right, so first off, we've already talked about this a little bit off mic. I don't think the name fits super well. Missing Persons is an odd choice.
Doesn't fit at all.
So I'm going to have to hit some points on that.
I would have called it like My Other Self or something.
I was thinking Mistaken Identity, but maybe that's a little too on the nose and doesn't really play into
Should have just called it The Fugitive.
The Fugitive. Harrison Ford is The Fugitive.
Should have just called it Star Wars A New Hope.
So I'm going to duck points for that. But overall, I will say that the stories themselves are pretty good. One was A story is way better than B story, but B story's fun.
But A story is cuckoo bananas.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. Freddy's interactions with this are probably some of my favorite of season one so far, if not the series.
The spit roast? Oh, my God.
The spit roast was fantastic. And I would say I'm going to go ahead and give this... we're going to go with a C+ on this one.
Really?
Either a C+ or a B-. I'm trying to figure. We'll go C+.
Wow.
We'll go C+.
This is the furthest we've ever been apart.
Oh, really?
I'm going B+.
You're going B+.
Because the first story is so cuckoo,
mm-hmm.
but also not bad. Not badly done at all.
I'll change to B-.
It's just, you don't have to change
nope.
just because.
Nope. Okay. Changing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to jump off a bridge later. You want to go first?
Yes.
Sweet. So, But no, I'm going to go with a B+ because the opening story is so preposterous and fun.
Yes.
I love that the B story has a lot of fun elements to it. It's got that little bit of sleaze. It's a little bit more of a traditional Freddy's Nightmares kind of episode.
Yeah.
But it has those tropes that I just love about anthologies and stuff where
Absolutely.
Like you switch bodies with people. It's almost like it would be like a Freaky Friday. Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
Now I can't even say Friday.
I guess we gotta watch it.
Anyway, but it was like freaky that.
Yeah.
And that to me, like it started really strong and wacky.
Yeah.
And then just ended kind of on a solid kind of anthology ending.
And like, there are definitely seasons of later seasons of Tales from the Crypt for sure, that kind of have those same kind of elemental stories in it. Like, there's that one from season 6 where they did the Humphrey Bogart thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, yeah. I had a lot of feeling of that with this episode for the B story.
Well, and I love anthology TV, yes. But there is a formula.
Yeah.
And it does repeat.
Because at first I thought at the end of the A story, they were literally going to retell from Gina's perspective. And I was kind of really into that. And then when that didn't happen, I was like, okay, it's okay. So yeah, I'll go B minus.
Wow, I changed your score because you wanted to be like the cool kid in the
room. That's exactly what happened.
Well, on that note, I think it's about time we wrap this up.
That is true.
So what do we have next week, Double D?
So next week, we've got a very special one because of a certain guest star. So next week is Season 1, Episode 20, The Light at the End of the Tunnel, directed by Jonathan Bertel. He was the director of End of the World, the episode we loved very much.
Oh, yeah, possibly my favorite.
But our guest starring actor next week, Mr. Dick Miller.
Wow.
So Dick Miller comes to Elm Street next week.
I thought he was going to say Mr. T. Well, that's all the time we have this week. So thank you all for tuning in to Welcome to Primetime, a Freddy's Nightmares podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you want to reach out and cut someone, you can email us at freddysnightmarespod@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. And if you want to find out anything else about our show, about the merchandise we have available, just go to freddysnightmares.com. And I guess just be safe out there.
Yes.
Because Freddy is pulling people over.
And you don't want that to happen.
You do not. So until next time, we'll see you next week at Springwood.
Sweet dreams.
We were like right on time. Right? I was going to mention we were going to see Blood Money, but we're like 1 minute and 20 some seconds. We're like right, or 1 hour and 20 some seconds. So it's like...